Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. It's all there for you for free. All the good stuff, the things that we do here every day on the show are available to your little heart's content to be used. We have we clip it up and arrange it and sort it and shuffle it around and make it available in all kinds of different ways. Pick out a way that's convenient for you and use it that way. And of course, you've got lots of things you can read. You've got hundreds of Brain Trust members at your disposal right there on the website. So I hope you're checking it out. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there and my blog, which is a pretty handy way to find out and to make available to you the things that we've done recently. That's all right there at the homepage at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Or you can subscribe to the newsletter, you can also subscribe to the blog. It's right there on the blog page. You can find it at jimsblog.biz as well. Joan Pride is our guest. That's her clicking papers in the background. She's our good friend, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and author of an upcoming book, the name of which we don't know yet. Joan Pride, welcome back.
Hello there, Jim.
Hi. When's that book coming out?
My book?
Yeah, you're the. I told him you were the author of a book that we just haven't named yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, let me work on that.
You got a book in you, Joan.
I do?
There hasn't been an acerbic, sarcastic book written lately. I think you should write one. You can do that. You could do that well.
I think I could.
You agree with me, don't you?
Would you write me a little blurb on the jacket?
I would definitely write a blurb for your jacket.
Wow.
I would just be returning the favor, Joan.
That's true. That's very true.
Because you've hardly endorsed all my books, right?
Well, that's because they're good, yeah.
All two of them. Joan, quickly, I don't want to dwell on this, but, you know, the Bush administration has got to be saying, what next? After what happened over the weekend with Mr. Cheney and the guy
right. They
got shot.
Right.
What a terrible accident. Happens every week, at least, somewhere in the country during hunting season, somebody gets peppered with birdshot. If you've ever been quail hunting or pheasant hunting or grouse hunting or a dove hunting, you know, somebody gets peppered with birdshot, and it's usually not fatal, but sometimes people get hurt. And so that part of the deal is kind of understandable. But what followed is a clinic on how not to report what happens, right?
Well, it probably would. We wouldn't even be talking about it today if the administration, or I don't know if it would be Mr. Cheney's office or Mr. Bush's office, had just come out and said, this is what happened. Mr. Cheney is very upset about it. But it's sort of the message kind of got botched. And, you know, this seems to happen so often. And I'm not just talking about this administration. Many, many administrations.
Although this administration is good at it.
Well, that's true.
I have to be honest.
But administrations don't seem to learn the lesson that often it's the, and I don't want to use the word cover up here because there was nothing to cover up,
right.
But the hiding of information ends up making the story bigger than it really needs
to
be.
Well, that becomes the story.
Right.
That was my point to start with. The story now is not that Harry, what's his name, got shot.
Mr. Whittington.
Whittington got shot, and I'm praying that he's doing well and getting better, and I think he is. But the story is now not that the man got shot. The story is now about how the thing was handled. You know, Joan, I agree that in the first few hours, making sure the family got notified. And since it was already at the end of the day on Saturday, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with maybe the press not being notified Saturday night.
Right.
But sometime Sunday morning, a spokesperson for the vice president should have said, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happened. Right behind me is the owner of the ranch. She's going to have a statement to make as well. She was a witness. This is what happened. The vice president is very upset about this. He's concerned about his friend, but he will be making a statement soon. And then, as you said, and then the next day, make a statement.
And it would have completely gone away. And I read that they compared this incident with, and I don't really remember this very well, you might, the president at some point in the past, I think, ran into someone on his mountain bike.
Oh, yeah, the bicycle.
The bicycle.
Yeah.
Well, the press was briefed immediately, given all the facts, and I don't think anybody even remembers it today.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Although the gunshot thing is a lot more dramatic than a bicycle. And Mr. Cheney has had a very long and distinguished career as a public servant, no question about it.
Right.
The man has an incredible resume. Regardless of whether you agree with his politics or not, you can't deny his service to this country.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is going to be a very unfortunate footnote, if not a half a chapter in his legacy, and it's
right.
Very unfortunate. But you know, Joan, one thing I want to point out is that what a great opportunity this would be to teach the importance of safety in hunting. And you know, I've hunted birds many times in my life. I don't know how many times I have swung around not knowing that the person had moved up in my sight. But thankfully, I saw them before I shot.
Well, and I know nothing about hunting quail, but one of the things I read, written by someone who does this often, was that rule number one is that you always know where everyone in your party is.
That's right.
Well, I think the other unfortunate thing was that the person who was speaking, the ranch owner, made it seem as if it was Mr. Whittington's fault. And even if it was, even if he was out of place, it probably wasn't the smartest thing for the person to have said.
No, and of course, Mr. Cheney completely denounced that. And
right, yeah, but it took him 2 or 3 days to do that.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
Is, you know, and the only reason why I'm bringing this up right now is just to say that you know, if a small business owner out there, Joan, has anything that's close to this, the best way to deal with it is to deal with it quickly. Because
Right. Because
there are PR situations in the lives of small business owners. This happens sometimes.
Sure.
Somebody gets hurt on the job. There's a legal, you know, some kind of a fraud issue with an employee or something like that. The best thing to do is to get it out there, because the longer you take, the more it starts to smell.
That's right.
After, I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back with Joan. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after. A little Steely Dan for you. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a big Steely Dan fan, right? Right, Joan?
You bet.
And Joan, the lead story today is about immigration. It's about the guest worker program. And can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, this is a really interesting issue, because by guest worker we don't mean granting more citizenship to folks from other countries, but allowing them in to work in this country, and having to do with the whole issue of jobs that, you know, Americans don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We need these people to come in and work for us, but it's an interesting issue, because it's kind of dividing conservatives, because you have business folks who need these people.
Right.
But you also have social conservatives who are concerned about immigration rules and the problem of illegal immigrants, and they think that a guest worker program is just going to make this worse. So it's a very tough issue, particularly for the Republican Party.
It is, and I just had on in the previous hour John Gay with the National Restaurant Association was on the show telling us a little bit about where the legislation is right now on this, and it's passed the House, and it's now in the Senate. And it's going to be debated in March pretty heavily in the Senate and maybe even become law sometime in the next few months. Well, the point he's making is similar to what you were saying, and that is that this, the bill as it came out of the House, he's concerned, will be punitive toward people who employ a lot of the people that are in question, which include the restaurant industry.
Right. Well, that could be a big problem. Sure.
Well, and what he's saying is that some of the stuff that's coming out of Congress, and he's flummoxed because he says, you know, he's surprised that it, and this is kind of speaking to your point, Joan, he's surprised that a Republican controlled Congress would be putting out some of this stuff. He's saying that it's punitive toward businesses, that it's putting, in other words, the remedy to make sure that no one hires an illegal immigrant is extra punitive on the employer when they may have limited ability to really check these things.
Exactly. Well, again, that's why this is such a really tough issue for that side of the aisle.
You've been covering Washington for a few years now, Joan. He said he'd been doing this for over 20 years. I'm older than both of you. Not that I've covered Washington, but I paid attention.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen a stickier wicket issue than this immigration thing?
I think that's a good point. I don't think I have. And I've been around, I'm afraid to say, a pretty long time, too. And this is, I'm not sure how you solve this one without really upsetting one side or the other.
Well, and the numbers are vast. He says there are like 11 million, we're talking about 11 million people.
Gee.
A lot of people. And what they're proposing is a penalty, pay a fine, $1,000 or something like that, $1,500.
Right.
And then go to the back of the line to get status for a green card. But come out of the shadows, come out of the dark, and become known, become registered, identified, and go to the back of the line, pay a little fine, and go through the process of getting a green card.
Right, but as we say here, this is exactly what some Republicans or some conservatives
right.
are concerned about. It's sort of the camel's nose under the tent theory that these people are going to be rewarded for having been in the country illegally, and to them it's kind of a backdoor approach to sort of to the A word, which they would hate to say, which is amnesty.
Well, and the thing about it, though, Joan, is to me, Here's what we know. I think we have a condition. I won't call it a disease because I'm just going to call it a condition.
Mm-hmm.
We have a condition that is crippling. We have a condition that is untenable, and there may be four or five different medications that we can take for this condition, and we don't know which one is the right one. But there's one thing that we can write down. And say is going to be the case. Any medicine that we choose, whether it's the good medicine or the one that kind that doesn't work, is not going to taste good.
Well, that's right.
Why don't we get over the fact that it's going to be distasteful and find the best one?
Right, because you can't get around the fact that we need these people, and you can't get around
That's right.
The fact that they are in so many are in the country already illegally due to whatever failure of our previous immigration system occurred, but you can't vaporize them, you can't throw them all out, so I think you have to do something, and, you know, maybe if you get them on the road to being legal, you know, maybe they start paying taxes, they start participating in society, and then you end up with positive in both in economic terms and social terms.
Well, and the thing is, Joan, short of a wall, and I'm not even sure then if that would do it, we're not going to stop people coming across the border.
That's another
reality.
Yeah.
And you know, these we need to get these people identified and into the system somehow, whatever that takes, and paying taxes and feeling good about themselves, feeling better about themselves. And by the way, folks, I said the National Restaurant Association said that there were 11 million. That's also the number that Kiplinger used. Joan, I should have pointed that out. Kiplinger, probably before the NRA said it, Kiplinger said there were 11 million. It's almost 29 after. Actually, it's almost 30 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Price. Stay with us.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for joining us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the when do you think do you think this year is going to be a pivotal year for the immigration issue? Do you think anything is going to happen to make anything? I mean, even if it's wrong, somebody does something.
I have to tell you, the way this Congress operates, you can't bet on anything happening. It's just, I know I'm sounding very cynical, but gridlock seems to be just be getting worse and worse up there.
These are cynical times, aren't they?
Yes, and I'm not blaming one party or the other. There's plenty of blame to go around.
I agree with you. What we got? We got too many special interest groups and not enough leadership.
That's true. Right.
And I don't know what it's going to take, Joan, to find that rare commodity of leadership. I don't know where it's going to come from, because it doesn't seem to me that we're finding it anywhere. There are very few people in Congress. I'm not saying there's not any, but there are very few people on both sides of the aisle who are willing to stand up and say, you know, what they think and stand for something. George Will had a really good article this week about Tom Coburn, the Republican from Oklahoma, and that, you know, he's the kind of guy who says, you know, he says what he thinks.
Right.
And whether you agree with his politics or not, I think he's probably one of the leaders. I think on the Democrat side, I think Joe Lieberman is an incredible leader.
Right.
And we just need more of those guys. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy a little bit. But primarily from this is interesting. You guys chose an interesting topic to bring up in terms of the economy, and that's research and development. Why would this be part of the economy?
I sure wish your listeners could see this graph. It's pretty dramatic because we're talking about government-funded research and development versus private sector-funded research and development. And guess which line is going up and which is going down?
It reminds me of the Robert Frost poem. I came to a fork in the road. two roads, one direction, one the other direction. And that's a horrible paraphrasing of the poem, folks. But it does remind you of that, doesn't it? Talk about our Johnny Carson's fork in the road. The industry-funded R&D is going up, and the government-funded R&D is going down.
What's interesting about this graph, though, is it shows 1970 through 2005, and really the lines got to their biggest separation in 2000. In other words, the upward trajectory of private sector versus the downward trajectory of public sector. And now it's kind of even out, so I guess it's going to just, we're predicting it's going to kind of stay pretty far apart but not get any worse.
Well, you know, Joan, in the one, you know, depending on how you look at things, I guess, this might actually be a good signal. I mean, one of the things we've gotten used to over the years has been what's called technology transfer, and that presumes that the government created it and then the industry found some of that and licensed it or wound up with it somehow and made it into something that consumers can use, right?
Right.
And so we've had the notion that that's the way things ought to be, but my point is, I would be more concerned if both of these lines were going down, meaning that that research and development was just diminishing, period.
Yes.
But it does look like industry-funded R&D is going up significantly. A lot of that, obviously, is because of the technology boom that we've had over the last 20 years. But my point is should we really care who does the R&D as long as it's being done? And isn't it better as a free trader and as a market person like I am,
right.
isn't it better? Shouldn't you know? I mean, I'm thinking that it's actually better if business is doing the R&D, not government. What do you think?
Well, sure, because you know when government does it, you can imagine the strings that come attached to it.
Inefficiencies too,
right?
Don't forget that.
Right. Oh yeah.
And the time involved. You know, I mean, if a business is doing it, there's a profit motive.
Yes.
And so they're moving fast as they can. Government, not so much.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Joan, we're going to take a quick break in a few seconds. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about cell phone privacy. Have you been worried about that? Well, there's been some of that in the news.
Right.
We're also going to talk about the post office. I'm going to ask Joan, how long will the post office remain a public organization? And they've got some things to say about some private postal operations that might be popping up. We'll talk about those issues and more after these messages. Tony Taylor, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, your fine organization, the Kiplinger folks, have an outstanding website, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And you got a few publications too, don't you?
A couple.
The Kiplinger letter is the one we work off of every
right.
week. And that's since been around since 1923. And, and then that's the weekly publication, which you
yes.
can get by mail or by electronic means.
Or
by,
both.
By email. And then you've got three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And then there's the magazine.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And there's probably a phone number somewhere, isn't there, Joan?
And it's toll-free, too. It's 800-544-0155.
Ask them for the free trial, folks. Tell them you want that Blasting Game free trial. Check that out when you get a chance.
And don't let them hang up on you.
Yeah, exactly. Joan, let's move down and talk about cell phone privacy. Are you concerned about your own cell phone privacy?
Well, I'm kind of a dinosaur. I really hardly use my cell phone.
Yeah, what's up with that, Joan? Why would you give me your cell phone number, if you don't turn the darn thing on?
I know. Ask me for it all the time, and I say, I'll give it to you, but don't bother using it.
I needed to talk to you this week. I can never get you on your cell phone.
So I should be available to you 24 hours a day.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
And I bet you I'm not the only one who says that.
I don't care.
Well, turn the darn phone on. It's not costing you anything. I mean, what if I needed you? What if I were in jail and I needed you to bail me out or something?
Oh, I should not be the first person you
what
call,
What if I needed
me?
You to pay my ransom or something, Joan?
Hmm.
But assuming that you actually had come into the 21st century, Joan, and you were actually using your cell phone like most human beings do, would you be concerned about your privacy?
Oh, definitely. No question about it.
So what's the issue here?
Well, it sounds like cell phone records are a problem. They're just too easy to get your hands on them. And people are becoming unscrupulous, selling them to the highest bidder, and investigators can get them, and they fall into hands of people that you don't want to have them.
What are they doing with those things? Just calling people or spamming them, or what are they doing?
Well, I don't know. I could see where you could have a situation where a private detective is trying to figure something out about someone and gets the phone records. Maybe a divorce case or something like that. But the problem appears to be data brokers. I don't really understand what a data broker is, but it doesn't sound good.
Well, yeah, I think these are people who find this kind of information and aggregate it and sell it.
Yeah,
obviously. But the thing is, Joan, I think here's the issue to me. These devices and I have a BlackBerry. Mine is not a crackberry. I'm not addicted to it. You know, I don't check it every second, although I do turn it on. It is on most of the time, but Joe, I think the issue is that these devices are becoming so much a part of our lives, and it's got so much information that we're going to have to come up with some ways, some protocols, and probably some laws on you know, how to deal with these. I mean, the day is going to come, Joan, where most of your world is going to revolve around this thing you're going to hold in your hand.
Well, because it's not going to be just be a cell phone. It's going to be
exactly right.
So many other things. You know, camera, television, everything, email, you name it.
Technological convergence.
Right.
Yeah. In front of your
That's
very
it.
Eyes.
That's right.
You can watch it happening, folks. Joan, let's move down and talk about the post office. They got problems?
Oh, just a few. They're trying to get into the 21st century, but they're having a rough time doing it.
And somebody's hired you to help them do that, Joan? Is that what's going on here? To help them?
Oh, me? Yeah, I'd be a big help, I'm sure.
Right. Joan, there is some reform, though, that Congress is working on, right? To pass
That's
a
right.
bill to pave the way for the U.S. Postal Service to add new services. What would those be? Do we know?
Well, there isn't much detail here, and I'm not sure that we know yet. But
well, here's the question, Joan:
yeah.
Is how long is the post office going to remain viable? At some point, you know, I mean, look, I love the post office. I like getting my mail
right.
6 days a week. I like that a lot. I don't know if we don't like the post office, I mean, I know package delivery is very efficient through the private corporations, very efficient, thank goodness. But I'm not sure about the regular mail. I'm a little concerned about that. But apparently, according to Kiplinger, private postal operations are popping up.
Well, I don't think you're going to see the Postal Service just disappear next year, but don't you think gradually over time, when you think about even just the word mail, when you think about how just what mail is changing so dramatically,
mm-hmm.
I don't think the Daily Mail coming in has the same excitement as it used to. I think, as you point out, one thing that's going to go is probably Saturday mail delivery, and another thing is people are paying their bills online, so the bills mm-hmm. probably won't be coming by the mail anymore.
That's right.
If you want to get in touch with a friend, you send them an email. You might even send invitations to parties by email. So,
and catalogs. We get so many catalogs. We get so many catalogs. I sometimes apologize to our mail carrier.
Especially around the holidays,
I tell them, I say, look, I did not order these. I'm sorry you're having to carry these around. I mean, we sometimes get 10 catalogs, 10 heavy catalogs every day.
Right. And then your significant other knocks you over to get them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no question about that. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how this is going. And, Joan, let's move over. Well, actually, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mr. Bush's budget, which has some interesting little quirky things in it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Folks, according to Kiplinger, it's not pretty. It's there's some weird things in here that we're going to talk about, and maybe even a little bit about genetically modified corn. I know that's on the tip of all of your lips. You can't wait for that. That's some big tease there, isn't it? Ten Till, I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan.
Couldn't get away too soon.
Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. We're talking politics. Right, Joan?
Oh, yes.
You ready to talk politics?
Oh, boy, am I ever.
Joan, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan? Oh, by the way, is the snow gone in Washington?
Pretty much. You know, it's been crazy. We had a foot of snow over the weekend, and since then it's been about 50 degrees for the high.
Yeah.
And then next week, weekend, it's going to be 30. So
but
I'm very confused.
Basically, it didn't incapacitate you guys, did it?
No, not on a little unusual. Usually, an inch or two incapacitates
That's
us.
That's what
but
I
we
thought.
Had, we had enough warning about this one that they were on the ball.
Oh, good. Joan, the president's budget is. Let me read this right here. It's full. This is according to Kiplinger, folks. The president's budget is full of omissions, wishful thinking, unrealistic political and economic assumptions.
And by
Joan,
being,
did you
and
write
that
this?
Means it's just like every other president's budget.
Did you write this, Joan?
No, I wish I had.
Take the alternative minimum tax, for example. Give us the rest of it, Joan.
Well, this is interesting. We're saying that there's no question Congress is going to have to extend a provision that would prevent a ridiculous number of middle-income taxpayers being stuck under the AMT.
Which that the government will receive less tax revenue from AMT this year.
Right. As we call it, scoring and looking at revenue gains and losses. This is what we'd call a revenue loss.
Right. But
and it's a big one.
Yes.
But the budget doesn't. The need for Congress to do that, and because it's not factored into the budget calculations in Bush's budget, that kind of helps, I wouldn't say balance it, because it's nowhere near balanced, but you don't have that revenue loss showing in his proposal.
So the revenue's probably not going to be there, but Mr. Bush's budget doesn't show that. It shows that it's still coming in. And,
right.
And maybe in his defense, it hasn't been taken away yet, so why not count it?
Well, but that's not the way it works.
I understand.
In budget
land. Iraq and Afghanistan.
This is interesting. No funding has been set aside in his proposal for war expenses in next year's budget. I mean, he's pulling out this year? No.
What's wrong with? I mean, that's bizarre.
Yes.
All right. Then the budget includes revenue from the. I love this one though, Joan. This is my favorite one.
Yeah. Well, this is fantasy
land. Read this for us. This is my favorite.
The budget includes revenue from new oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, although drilling remains.
This is funny.
Yeah.
All right, and then here. How about the next one?
Oh, higher airline passenger ticket fees.
Yeah.
Now again, just as with Anwar. You're probably not going to get the higher airline passenger ticket fees because Congress keeps voting that down. And if you look in the president's budget, for example, in the area I look at, the SBA, the Small Business Administration, year after year he proposes eliminating programs within the SBA, and year after year Congress keeps rejecting his proposals.
And folks, this is from Kipling. Wing wacko group. I mean, you guys pretty much play it straight down the middle, maybe just a little bit right-leaning. But the thing is, Joan, I mean, when I read what you guys have reported here, I'm thinking I missed a kegger somewhere when they were putting this budget together.
But again, to be fair to the president, you know how much I hate to be fair to the president. He's not the first person to do this. It's been going on
forever. So you're saying
that
this is classic?
Oh, very classic.
And that's
business as usual.
Hey, Joan. The pity.
True.
And now we come back to my lament earlier about leadership.
Yes. Well, there is none. That's the problem.
Leaders don't do this kind of baloney.
Yes, and we also say in our little item here that it's not just the president, it's also Congress. They'll be playing
budget tricks. Oh, yeah. Too. No, that's right. Well, how about this? We still don't have do we even have a budget yet for 2006?
I think they finally did, but just a couple of weeks ago.
And
we're just 4 months into the fiscal year.
You know, Joan, if I don't do my job and I wait that long, guess what? I don't get.
That's right. But me neither. No.
And you know what? Yeah. Some people are saying. I've actually heard a couple of leaders in Congress say that that's what's got to start happening. If we get our job done, we don't get paid.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, I think that may have been Tom Coburn. I've forgotten who said that, but somebody said that, and I think that's what needs. Kiplinger, go to kiplinger.com/go/tax cut, and you can get some tax cut software from Kiplinger to simplify your tax filing. Joan, that's a great little feature.
Hey, and
there.
I use it myself. It makes my taxes much easier.
Thank you for making that available. Thank you, Joan, for being here. See you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.